Welcome back to the Bumblecast, everyone. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me is my partner in crime, Kyle JCRB Krause.
Hello. Stick 'em up. I'm a criminal. I'm a partner of the criminal. I don't know where this is going. Where is this going, Ian?
Straight into the ground so far.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Bonnie and Clyde, we ain't.
No, we are not.
Because frankly, I just don't have the figure to be Bonnie.
Yeah, I know. That's fine.
So, in recent news, they finally announced the Nintendo Switch and gave us all sorts of details.
Yes, they did.
We've discussed this at length in previous podcasts, going, we really want those details.
Yep, and now we have the details.
And, and how are you liking them details?
And now I'm just like, eh. it's always something with Nintendo.
Yeah.
They're always like, you know, the things start out looking real good with Nintendo, and then you get that face smack moment with them where you're like, come on. I love you guys. I love Nintendo, but come on, you guys. You can't now keep doing this.
Let's address this one first thing, is a lot of people are up in arms about the paid online.
The fact that it's paid doesn't really bother me, but...
No, I mean, it stinks. It's more money.
Sure.
But who do you think is going to be paying for the servers, you know?
Right.
I mean, as much as I enjoy the ability to just go online and do whatever, those servers have to be maintained, they have to be funded, the staff to make sure that they don't get hacked and that they're, you know, optimized and all that. They have to be paid. We are not living in some beautiful socialist video game utopia yet. You know, once we're all plugged into the Matrix, that'll be different.
We're working on that. We got VR. We're working on it.
So, I mean, the fact that they have to ask people for money to provide a service doesn't rankle me at all.
No. I think the main thing is, right now, these days, just access to playing online, paying for access to play online, that doesn't cut it anymore. There's all these value-added things that Xbox Live and PlayStation Network do, like free games every month. And in Xbox's case, you get to keep those games forever, regardless of whether your account lapses or not. Nintendo is doing that one free virtual console game per month, but only for the duration of that month. So a 1 month free rental of a virtual console game, an NES or SNES virtual console game. To me, that is not a good value for paying for a service like that.
Not in the slightest. Not at all. It's almost insulting.
It almost is, yeah, because these are virtual console games. As great as Nintendo's classic library is, I'm a big retro gaming fan. That's just not a good value in terms of just giving us one per month, and then you have to, and then you only get it for that month. Is kind of, it's a really terrible model, and I hope that they look at some of the feedback and improve that, because that's unacceptable to me.
So. I'm also curious how the virtual console is going to move over from Wii U to Switch, because one of the things that ticked me off when they went from original Wii to Wii U was that if you wanted the virtual console games you'd already purchased, you had to purchase them again, but at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm already paying you again for the product I already bought, and now I have to pay you again? What's the incentive of ever buying it if you're just going to keep charging me repeatedly for what's basically used goods?
Yeah, I do not suspect that there will be a cross-platform purchase thing there, or a cross-platform play, I suppose. I figure they're probably going to charge you again to upgrade, because Nintendo, they really just kind of make boneheaded decisions sometimes. I love them, but man, it's like they look at what the competition's is what the competition does. And they're like, how can we do that but worse? It's like, come on, guys. Anyway.
But I think it's the idea of the portable console is not necessarily flawed.
No.
But people had a hard enough time understanding that the Wii U was not just an addition to the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
That it was a full system. And now you're asking them to understand that the tablet plugs in as the console, but also comes out of the console and plugs into the controllers that can plug into themselves, which can also plug into a dock or not plug into anything at all so that it can be a system, but also a handheld.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think your average consumer is, one, going to want to keep up with all that, and two, understand it. Because there's still that divide of handheld versus console.
Yeah, I don't think that's too bad, personally. They did make it generally clear in that reveal trailer how it worked. It's definitely a lot more clear than they made the Wii U look in that reveal trailer, which was just a mess. But yeah, the Switch, it's, I mean, there's definitely a lot of steps involved with, you know, removing controllers and docking the system and etc. But I don't think it's too difficult to necessarily wrap your hands around, as it were. But I guess time will tell if, you know, Nintendo kind of makes that unclear too. Like, no, it has to work this specific way and it won't work this way. And yeah, so yeah, I guess we'll see. They are really, really, really still just trying to shoehorn motion controls into this thing,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of hilarious and a little sad. It's like, we really don't need motion controls, guys. Come on.
I mean, Wii Sports was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Very responsive, a decent workout if you stuck to it.
Sure.
And their motion control games, I would say, from limited experience, were far more solid than the Kinect or what PlayStation tried to do with the Move.
Right, yes.
That being said, they are kind of a niche game-style gimmick, and building your entire platform around them still, I think, is a little dubious, especially since the Switch is obviously geared more for the hip millennial mobile crowd and not the family crowd that the Wii was.
Yeah.
The Wii was huge because it got everybody. It wasn't just the core gamer. Wii U confused everybody because it was kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Switch seems to be, no, we're really doing it for gamers. But also, here's the family stuff still. And it's like, pick a direction.
Yeah.
I think that's why the mobile console thing really isn't selling me on it, because it feels like you're trying to have the best of both worlds. The 3DS is already the standout handheld experience.
Yes.
And with the new 3DS, brilliant name there,
Nintendo
just recently
again
coming out, to me, it would make more sense to focus on building a new 3DS library. You've got a new console. You've got it with more power. Do more with that and corner the mobile market still, and then focus all your resources on the console market, because you have a huge staple of strong first-party IPs, and people have wanted those for two generations now. Focus on that. Trying to do both, to me, feels like you're competing with your handheld market, which you've already won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's really no reason. Although, I guess they're trying to compete with the overall mobile market, which I guess, but they're also in that market now, creating software for that market. So are they kind of trying to cannibalize themselves?
Another worrisome comparison I've seen is that, you know, the idea of console-level experience on the go was already tried on the Vita, and we all know how well that did.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm very wary of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much on my yes, I'm getting it list because Splatoon 2 is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have that in the house, I don't think Aaliyah will speak to me anymore. And while the official information has come out as of this recording, Fire Emblem Warriors was announced.
Yeah.
And I want that purely on the experience with Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah, I would agree. Me too. I do want to play that. I
mean, if it's pretty much the same thing, just with the Fire Emblem cast that I'm not even that familiar with.
Right, me neither.
I'm on board, because the Hyrule Warriors was tons of fun. Yeah. I have not even come close to completing it. And I've sunk, I don't even want to think about how many hours. If it's more of the same, just with a new cast, I'm good. I'm sold. I'm done. I know it's going to be fun. I know it's going to be pretty. I know it's going to be satisfying. Just, here we go. Open the door. And I guess along that line, I might as well get Breath of the Wild for it while I'm here.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, to go ahead and put Sonic Mania on there, but I've already got the pre-order on the PS4 version. I don't want to run the risk of losing pre-orders in the shuffle, so.
Yeah. I'm just picking up. I'm getting a PC version of that, so.
Show off.
How am I show off? That game could probably run on practically anything. I'm sure it could run on your computer just fine.
Well, let's not say things we can't take back.
We can find out right now. Go get Sonic CD for on Steam. You can find out if it runs on your computer. It's the same engine.
Point being, in the end, the Switch is not something I'm excited for.
Right.
It's almost more of an obligation to certain brands and IPs that I want to follow.
I probably won't pick it up in the first year. I rarely pick up consoles in the first year anyway, so that's nothing new. I am not a super late adopter generally, but I tend to wait a while.
So. Look at you showing restraint and maturity. Good man. Good man.
Well, it used to be that I just didn't have money. I mean, I still don't have all that much money, but I mean, yeah. And also, I have like an enormous decades-long backlog of games that I probably should play instead of wasting time doing other things with my life. But yeah, oh well.
No. Add to the pile.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. I have games. Yeah, just games that have not been even put in the system yet. I don't even know if they work. They're probably broken. I haven't even opened up the box yet to see if there's a disc in there. There might be. I might have a bunch of empty boxes on my shelf.
Now, all these concerns aside, the fine gentleman over at Nightworks, which we'll have a link down in the description, actually has gotten me a press pass to see the Nintendo Switch in action next week. So I'm hoping that my experience hands-on will reverse my opinion of what I've seen online.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that might help a lot, we'll too. See. I'm sure Best Buys will be getting demo units all over, so I'll probably have a chance to play around with it myself soon. Mm-hmm. Within a month or two here. I'm just going over my
special status.
Right. Of course. You always... You know what? You know what I say? Whenever you have a special status like that, you should always gloat about it. Because you never know who might be listening and might be impressed.
Or gunning for you. Don't gloat, people. It's not pretty.
Or
it's
jealous. Nice. Yeah. You want to make people as jealous as possible. That's the only way to live life.
No.
Okay. You know I'm just being a contrarian to be a jerk, right?
No. I'm actually backpedaling. I feel too egotistical.
I'm joking. But maybe somebody should be jealous of Ian.
Not much to be jealous of.
Hey, man. People will get to play the Switch soon enough. It's not like it's some unattainable thing they'll never get to play in their lives.
At 450 Canadian, yeah, it might be.
Well, yeah. Oh, no.
Anyway.
That's why you wait for it to go used. You buy used for 449 Canadian. Thanks, GameStop. Or EB Games, as it is up there, I think. Wait, you got both up there, don't you?
They're the same thing. But
I know they're the same thing, but why are they the same thing? Why do they keep both? Because they got rid of EB Games down here.
From my understanding, it was GameStop acquired EB.
Yes.
And then very aggressively pushed to rebrand all EB things as GameStop.
Yep.
And some of the EBs said no. Huh. And GameStop was like, well, yeah. And EB said no. And so they didn't.
Huh. Strange.
At least that's the way I understood it.
Because literally every EB Games I know of became a GameStop.
There's like one EB Games in driving distance near us. There's four or five other GameStops, but there's one EB.
There are two.
Same store layout, same promotions.
Right, yeah.
But the loyalty cards don't work.
There are two GameStops within walking distance of me.
Ooh, lucky you.
They are within walking distance of each other. They're practically across the street from each other in a diagonal. It's one of the more ridiculous things I've seen. They are less than like 3/4 of a mile apart. I don't understand at all. And they're both still in business, obviously. So I don't understand. Then there's another one a few more miles away, and it's ridiculous.
What you should totally do is buy a used game from one, put a little tiny mark on the case, and see how long it takes to get restocked at the other store.
Sell it back.
Just keep buying and reselling this game and see how long it takes for it to cycle between the two.
Just give it, yeah. I don't even understand it because both stores are like about the same size. They're both in like outdoor strip mall areas. There's really nothing different about them whatsoever. One's next to a Walmart and runs next to a Target. That's the only difference.
Universe A and Universe B GameStops.
Apparently, I don't understand. Anyway, for the people curious about the GameStop situation in my local area.
Now they know.
For all one of you who would be interested in that, and that one person is me, there you go. Oh, one thing I also did want to mention real quick. The accessory pricing. It's ridiculous. Yeah. What? I do not know what they're thinking. $70 for a pro controller? It's like, what? Why?
I mean, I can kind of understand the price for a new PS4 controller because it's got a lot of technology in it.
Well, I mean, well, the Switch controller is going to be the same as that.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, but it's the PlayStation 4 controller is still not $70.
Oh, wait, sorry. I'm thinking of Canadian prices up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, $70 US for a controller.
Yeah, the after taxes up here, it's going to be about $425, $450 Canadian for a Switch.
Ooh.
And that's just the system.
Yeah.
Games are going to be somewhere between $70 and $80 Canadian.
Yikes. Ooh, that's a big pill. That's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, that's more like a suppository. Anyway, on that note, let's move on to a happier thing, like the winner of the latest Bumble Raffle!
Woo-hoo, yeah!
Now, the Bumble Raffle is a contest we have every show where you randomly get selected to win a free autographed book by moi. If you are a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every drawing. But you can still write in to every show and have yourself put in for the regular drawing. Everyone gets the same chances. It's just the patrons get auto-entered. So, this week's winner is...
Kyle P.
Who is, believe it or not, our first non-Patreon winner.
Very nice. Also, that guy has a cool name. Nice name, sir. I like your name.
Just one more in the line of Kyle's.
Yeah, I know. I went to school with five of them. Oh, hold on. Four of them. I was the fifth.
You can put it whatever word you want.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to be in contact with you, Kyle, and not you, Kyle, other Kyle.
I'm in contact with you right now. What are you talking about?
Kyle P. We'll be in contact with you, get your contact information, and send you that book. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Kyle. Not me. That Kyle. That one over there.
You get to talk to me like twice a week on the show. No, that's a lie. You get to talk to me every week because we have not only the Bumblecast, but Bumblecast Gaming. So what are you complaining about?
That's true. And we did at this point, we're almost talking every day for this. If we want a little bit of inside baseball, I guess. You know, maybe every couple days at most at this point. But yeah.
I'm glad we get along, because otherwise these shows would be really awkward.
Well, why would we be doing this show together if we didn't get along, man? What would the incentive be?
Money?
Oh, okay. Patreon.com/BumbleCast.
I'm just saying, some people would pay to see us fight. There's a market for everything.
They're true. Yeah. Oh, man. Podcasts where people argue with each other? No, there's no market for that.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we've missed our niche. We get along too well.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. That might be the problem, actually. We need like a debate show.
We've tried to have debates on the show before, and it's like, I believe this. And you're like, yeah, that works.
Well, that's fine.
Or you say, I'm of this position. I'm like, yeah, I agree.
I know. We really need to find something we disagree on that isn't political or religious or anything like that. I can't think of anything we disagree on.
Not really, no. Nothing of real substance, at least.
No, not really. We're very much on the same wavelength most of the time, I think. It's weird.
Well, we've complained about the Switch. We floundered for a direction. Give me a topic. Let's talk about something for this show.
You know what? Let's talk about something a little bit more, I guess, kind of a general writing topic, I suppose, or a creating topic. Let's talk about
cerebral.
Yes. Let's talk about characters and characterization, something that you have quite a copious amount of experience with.
A modicum of experience, I would say.
Yes. Especially as of late.
Just like how to go about the process, the philosophy behind it, the thinking, the mechanics.
I guess maybe give your approach. How would you design like a new character? Or what is your thinking of coming up with characters?
Oh, shoot. Well, I guess it depends in part on what the scenario is.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's an original creation, if you're creating the cast for your story, the question would be, what is the point of these characters? Mm-hmm. Like if you're looking at it from the plot first, how do these characters both move the plot and are affected by the plot? Or if you have the characters first, how does their interaction with each other and the world move the story along?
Mm-hmm.
If it's something for an established piece of material, like, the Sonic book, it's a question of what does this character bring that is new or different or at least interesting to the mix? When we were doing all the world building in the Shattered World arc, every one of the characters that was put in was with the question of, okay, what do they bring to this that feels like it fits into Sonic's world and makes things more interesting for the core cast? Because one of the things we keep running into with the book is the main cast is interesting because, I mean, it's Sonic. Come on, it's the thing we grew up with. There's right. a reason why you come to the book, and it's Sonic.
Yeah.
But he is limited in his character growth because he has to match what the license is. So to give the illusion of progression, or to at least give you a reason to come back each time, because Sonic fights Eggman and wins, does not make for a stirring, continuous narrative.
No, it's also true with Mega Man and Dr. Wily.
It's true for anything.
Yeah, well, yes.
You need something to grow and to change, and that's why we have the extended cast and this secondary and third cast beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So with any of those, it's a question of how do they really bring something new? How do they challenge the hero in a way that if they don't necessarily change, it's at least interesting to see how they address it.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be applied to anything. I mean, like, let's take Batman, for example, because he's got one of the most notable rogue galleries out there. One of the most interesting approaches I've seen to that rogues gallery is that the ones that are the most stand out are aspects of Batman.
Yeah.
You've got, let's say, Scarecrow, who is the fear side of Batman. You have Mr. Freeze, who is the emotionless detachment that Batman seems to bring to the table. You have Joker, who is the complete antithesis. He's bright, he's colorful, but he's maniacal and chaotic, where Batman is dark and brooding and meticulous and thoughtful. You have, you know, all these comparisons in which you can spin out of it. And you can say that's a bunch of bull and there are a bunch of colorful characters. Who cares? It's up for debate. But that's how I would approach the Thought of the Rogues Gallery. So if you wanted to introduce a new villain and him or her not immediately be forgotten at the end of the story arc, what do they bring to the character and to the greater mythos that hasn't already been done to death?
Yeah. I do, and like... Go ahead.
No. Go.
I was going to say, I do like the Joker example, because even though he is kind of the antithesis of Batman, he's also like one step removed from Batman, which I think has been mentioned before, kind of lampshaded in the comics, where he's like, basically Batman is just one step away from becoming the Joker. Like, at any moment, he could just start going crazy and killing people like the Joker does. So I think that's kind of also an interesting characterization there.
It's also very broad because...
Well, true.
Different writers, different interpretations of both characters could throw that entire comparison out the window, but
That's very true. The basic idea is he is the antithesis, so that's true.
To use another DC example, the reason why Superman and Lex Luthor are such iconic antagonists towards each other is you have Superman, who is the embodiment of physical strength, overpowering physical ability, versus Lex, who's all cerebral. And how do the two combat each other? I mean, Superman's not dumb, and depending on who's writing him, he's probably right up there with Lex, which is, I don't know, boring for me, but the whole point is they're dynamic. You don't really have a ton of notable Superman villains because, I don't know, to me it feels like since he can do so much, and since he is such an everyman at his core, there aren't as many facets to play against him. Everything has to be a big giant monster to be thrown through a mountain because, granted, that's cool, but he doesn't really have the same rogues gallery that Vats does.
Yeah. I think Spider-Man is also a good example of someone with a strong rogues gallery of characters to just play off of him.
And again, it's because of that spinning off of what is the spinning. It's funny. No, it's not. It's spinning off of what the core of the character is. You've got Vulture, who is, you know, mobile in a different way. It's flying versus web slinging, but you've got the age versus the youth. You've got Green Goblin, who, again, he's got the mobility and he's got the banter, but he's a much more sinister twist on it. Dr. Octopus, who's got the multiple limbs vision going on, again, the mobility about being able to move and being able to strike at so many different directions, but his is all mechanical, whereas Spidey is just fast. You've got the intelligence of someone who is seasoned versus the intelligence of someone who is naturally gifted. You have Rhino, who's another, you know, animal-themed villain and who is not mobile, but he is so large and so immobile that all of Spidey's strength and speed really just bounces off him. You have the theatrics of Mysterio versus the theatrics of Spider-Man. You have the misdirection versus the red and blue tights right in your face. There's lots of ways to do this.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, how do you approach designing a character, like coming up with their story? Do you generally come up with backstories for most of your characters? Do they have origins most of the time, or do you kind of come up with the core character first and then maybe come up with a backstory later? Or I guess it would depend on the character, but I guess in general, when you need a character, do you come up with everything, or do you just kind of do what you need and then come back to the rest later if needed?
One of my problems is I come up with everything for everything. I've got design documents multiple pages long, and all you really need is something simple. But I don't know, it's a philosophy that Aaliyah and I both work under, is that you need to know where you're going.
Yeah.
You don't have to have every single step planned out, because that doesn't work. You never know when a new idea comes in or if something comes along that needs to change it, but you need to know where you're going so that you're not just floundering around or trying to piece it together later. With pretty much any character that I'm introducing, I try to figure out what is their motivation and where does that come from. It's all nice and good for them to fight one another, but why? What is that interaction? I guess let's go back a bit. Let's pick up Scourge when we were revamping Evil Sonic. Now, Evil Sonic in the old books was a really good example of how to do a character badly.
That's very true.
Which, not to be, you know, snarky or anything, but it didn't have any depth to it. It was Sonic is evil, therefore we're going to give him a couple of visual tropes, which is the old greaser biker look.
Yeah.
And he's evil because he just is. That's the antithesis.
Yeah.
There's no depth to it. The conflict arrives from just the basic principle of good versus evil. We know why Sonic is good, but evil Sonic is evil just by virtue of his name. That there's nothing to it. So when we put so much effort into revamping him to Scourge, and I think a large part of that goes to Patrick Spaziante's redesign, which looks really cool.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, there's that surface level that you can play with where it's, you know, he's the OC recolor and he tries to be better than Sonic. It's metaphysical humor.
Yeah, that's very true.
But that also lent itself to giving him motivation. Mm-hmm. He is literally a copy of Sonic. He is a derivative, because in the old continuity, it was established that Sonic was the prime. He was the core from which all other things originated from. So no matter what Scourge did, he was a derivative of Sonic. His very existence was Sonic the whatever. And he chafed against that. He rebelled against that. He fought against it. He tried to identify himself as anything but that.
Mm-hmm.
And through those efforts, only served to underline the fact that he was just angsty, dark Sonic. And from there, you have the conflict. You have the reason for his resentment. You have the reason for his violence. You have the reason for his obsession. And Sonic can remain unchanged because he's the core. He is that icon. And Scourge can bounce off him in multiple different ways. And that's why I think so many people found him to be so interesting and entertaining.
Yeah. You were able to develop him sort of around Sonic, I suppose.
And those who wrote him off as just a bad knockoff character, they weren't wrong, because that's what the character was.
What he was.
He worked on multiple layers. He was like an onion, an awful green onion.
Well, green onions are real. They do exist.
This is true.
They do exist.
But yeah, I figured that any character, I try to treat them as people and not characters.
Uh-huh.
I try to treat them as kind of actors on a stage and not so much chess pieces that I'm moving across the board. Because just from my perspective, if you think of them as pieces, you lose some of the, legitimacy, honesty of the character.
And the agency, maybe.
There we go.
Something
like
that, yeah.
They lose why they're doing things because you say they do, not because they chose to. It's all an illusion. It's all, you know, your construction. So obviously they have no choice. They don't exist. But to me, it feels like it makes more sense to plot things out, to figure out how they would interact and how they would move forward if I'm thinking of them as people, you know, if you're the fly on the wall listening in, versus I want them to do this.
Right.
And the only way to really have an informed opinion about how they would act and how they would move forward is if you knew where they came from and what drove them.
Mm-hmm. See, I've created some characters, but I always do struggle coming up with things, with backstories and stuff that I'm really happy with for them. They're just kind of blank slates. And that's really frustrating, because I don't know what it is. Like, I think of a backstory or something, and then I'm like, well, that's been done before. It's been done a million times. And I know that I should, like, try to put that out of my head. Like, I know it's been done before. Pretty much everything's been done before, but it's still, you know, that's really frustrating thing for me. So I know that's something you don't really deal with. You just kind of come up with it. And you're just like, okay, this is good. I'm sure you struggle with some of that.
No. Quite the opposite. It's,
oh, really?
I know exactly what you're talking about, and it is a terrible trap to fall into.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's something you have to be aware of, because, like you said, there are so many things that have been done before that if you fall into the safety of those tropes, it becomes derivative. Everyone knows where it's going. Everyone's seen it before.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, because everything has been done before, if you struggle to do something original for the sake of originality, that you have to have that perfect, special, unique snowflake of a character.
Which is impossible.
you're just going to end up revising and revising and digging yourself into a hole that you can't get out of.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no clear or easy answer mm-hmm. on how to get around that. For me, I think it comes down to create the character that you are interested in. See where the pitfalls may be, if anything's too predictable. And again, see where they would naturally move forward. I feel like that kind of fights the tropes a little bit. If it isn't you trying to make your character do a certain thing, it's they choose to. And maybe they'll go in a direction that you don't immediately enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like character A, by the nature of their character, wouldn't go into the burning house. But you need them to be heroic. You want them to save the baby. But they wouldn't do that. So how do you work around that? Have you written a character that is unlikable because they won't save the baby from the burning house? Or why is it will they not go in there? What is it about them that makes them say, let the fire department handle it? And from there, that just creates the conflict that becomes interesting, which makes the reader engaged with the character on whether or not they like or hate them. And that's another big thing, is you don't have to have characters that people like or agree with.
Right, right.
I think a big problem that a lot of feedback online is these days is people thinking that if character A says or does something, therefore they must be a mouthpiece for the writer, and therefore you can hate the writer.
Yeah, that is very common.
That's not right. That's wrong.
No.
The whole point of writing is to have multiple perspectives, have multiple voices, multiple characters.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to root for all of them. You're not even supposed to like all of them.
I struggle with that, too, because I personally want to like all of my own things. So it's like coming up with something I don't like is kind of difficult. I guess I can find something to like about them. Maybe. You got to make them multifaceted so they're not just always a jerk.
There's a number of templates and worksheets out there for filling out a character's biography that doesn't have anything to do with where they're from or what level of ninjutsu they're experts at or whether they can wield the lightsaber. But simple stuff like, what's their favorite color?
Uh-huh.
What is their favorite food? What is their pet peeve? You know, what is it that they're superstitious about? And it doesn't necessarily have to come up in the story. You know, if character A likes bananas, you don't have to go out of your way to have them saying, oh, what a lovely bunch of bananas. But it gives you a reason to think about who they are. You know, why do they like bananas? Well, it was because they went out with their uncle one day and to an open market, and they looked at the yellow fruit and said, what is that? And the uncle said, that's a banana. Why don't you try it? And they like it. And that's the last fond memory they have of their uncle before he was eaten by a rhinoceros. Yeah, that doesn't have to have any immediate bearing on the story, but it can serve as a seed for which you can just grow and do from. And that was all off the top of my head, by the way. I'm not necessarily saying it was good, but it's something there. Yeah, if their pet peeve is they can't stand it when people don't tie their shoelaces properly.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say about the character? Well, for one thing, they're observant, because who goes around looking at other people's shoelaces? It shows that they're a little obsessive, because here they are judging people over something that really doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, how do they act on it? Do they just look at it and kind of go, shoelaces? Or do they interrupt a conversation so that they can retie somebody's shoe? What does it say about the character, and how does it affect how they interact with other people?
Yeah. That is very interesting. Might have to try that with some of my own stuff one of these days, if I ever, you know, try anything with it. someday, maybe. Anyway, do we have anything else on this topic to hit?
I would say that the best way to practice this type of thing
mm-hmm.
is if you already have established material that you're working on, do some side interactions. Write fanfic of your own material is what I'm getting down to.
Okay.
And put them in scenarios where it's off the beaten path. You don't have to worry about where you're plotting it or where it's going. You know, your two characters walk into a Starbucks and they accidentally spill a drink on each other. How do they interact? How does it go? It doesn't even have to be funny or smart. It's just an exercise to see how these characters would interact. Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting there going, I have no idea how this would turn into anything, then that right there is telling you that the characters aren't necessarily as fleshed out as you want them to be. At the same time, I'm not saying that this has to be some in-depth introspective piece over the internal psyche, but just use it to play around with how they interact and who they interact with. Grab a character from your favorite piece of media, someone that you know, that you have a good idea of who they are. Plop them down with your characters. See how they interact. This doesn't have to see the light of day. This is just practice for you. And have them talk. They don't have to fight. They don't have to interact. They don't even have to do anything. Put them in two chairs in an empty room and have them debate the works of, I don't know, Vonnegut. It doesn't matter. The whole point is to put these characters into a way that they're interacting and see if you can readily find their voice. And if you can't, find one of those templates. Figure out what their favorite piece of fruit is. See if that does something for you.
Eat a banana. Don't get eaten by a rhinoceros.
Good advice for anybody.
Yes, yes.
If you listen to the show ultimately for any reason, take that away.
That's ultimately what I got out of this whole thing.
I'm glad we spent time on this topic.
Yes, good, yes. Good, good, good. Me too. All right. Are we ready for some Q&A?
Yeah, let's do something different. Let's answer some other questions.
All right. Well, first off, if you want to get in on this Q&A action and you want to submit a question to us, you can hit us up via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleJCRB using the hashtag bumblecast, or you can comment or send us a message on Patreon and we'll pick it up from there. First up is the Patreon priority Q&A from our lovely patrons over at patreon.com/bumblecast. First up is Sam Cybercat. People always want to know about Knuckles' hat, but I think the real OVA question is, will we ever see the return of Sonic's apparent favorite clothes?
I think one of my favorite image macros out there is a still from the OAV where Old Man Owl is dressed in said clothes. And the tick says, I see a gangsta. I'm pretty gangsta myself. Never fails to crack me up.
Nice. I've never seen that.
Oh, really? Man. I'll see if I still have it somewhere. I'll send it to you.
Oh, but, man. That's great. I've never seen that. Oh, man.
I would love to make an homage to that somewhere. I don't know where or when, but you know me. I like my little shout-outs.
Yes,
considered, yeah. On the maybe list.
Yeah, the OVA is so ridiculous. I enjoy it for its, like, stupidness. And it is stupid. But it's still fun.
Sometimes I really wonder what the franchise would be like if that became...
Oh, man.
The core of it.
If that was the whole template behind the series, the whole.
Like, what if the whole two worlds thing, Sonic XE type scenario, we had the land of the sky and the land of darkness still?
Yeah.
I don't know. Man. I think that'd be kind of fun.
That would be cool, actually. Might be kind of interesting. Anyway, next up, we got a question from Andrew F. Are there any creative ideas you regret or wish you could have done better?
Oh, always. Always. Every day, every minute, every second. But that's another difficult balancing act, especially in creative writing, when do you stop and say, okay, this is good enough, and when do you say, no, this needs to be revised further?
When deadlines hit.
that's kind of a deciding factor, yeah. But there's also, what does the editor want? What does the licensor want? What is the climate of the book at the time? Because what's going on around it can have an effect. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly things that I wish I could take another pass at. But I think for the most part, what has been published is about the best we could have done with it. Mm-hmm. Given all the circumstances at the time.
Sure.
You have to learn to let go of some of these things and... like the handrail of a roller coaster, I really don't want to let go of most things.
Yeah, you kind of have to be careful, though. Maybe some of them come back and bite you.
There's that, too. Yeah, yeah. So
you're like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that because now that ruins this thing. It's like, ah.
Yeah, at which point does it become the third time Lucas messed with the trilogy, you know? It's sometimes you just got to let it be.
Yeah, no remasters for you. No special editions with added explosions and... Yeah. And, you know, music scenes. All right. And our last priority question comes from Michael B. Are air charms the only underwater breathing device someone can use / only allowed to use in Meropus? Or could somebody use something more technological like an air necklace or a scuba apparatus?
Oh, yeah. Anybody can use anything. It's not like you come down there with your snorkel gear and they're like, no, you must only use Meropus air charms. You have 30 seconds to change, otherwise you drown.
Why not?
No, with Meropus, with Meropus or any of the other underwater cities, you know, however you manage to breathe under there is how you breathe under there. They obviously have the air charms as a means of letting visitors come in, but there's no restriction on how you breathe down there.
Okay. I guess that would make sense. I'm guessing scuba gear is a thing that would exist in the comic universe. I mean,
yeah, it's
why not?
One of the things I keep coming back to with Sonic in particular is in the classic era, there really felt like the technology level for most of the people was fairly bare bones. Not bare bones, but a little antiquated. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that it's a biplane and not anything more advanced. And the idea that Eggman has the super advanced tech that puts him over the edge is kind of interesting. But that all went out the window with SA1. So I think it would be interesting to see a take on Sonic where Sonic and all his fuzzy buddies have only like World War II era tech to work with. Whereas Eggman has 23rd century material.
That could be interesting.
I mean, I guess Boom kind of does that. But that's, Tails can conjure any manner of weird things out of two coconut shells. So it isn't quite the same. But then again, Boom is also playing things for him fast and loose and funny. So
yeah. Sonic 1 has those goggles, though. That goggles item that never actually was implemented. I think, was it confirmed that that was to allow Sonic to breathe underwater? Or was that just conjecture?
I think it was just conjecture, but given that it was found in Labyrinth Zone, I don't really see what else it could be.
Right, that's true.
I've also heard that it might have helped him have full speed underwater instead of the underwater physics, but who knows?
Seems a little... That would be a little strange, but... Yeah, so there's precedent there for, I guess, scuba goggles existing in the Sonic universe. So there's that.
I mean, like... SA2 introduced the air necklace, and powerless, cordless, tankless rebreather, which doesn't exist because we don't have the technology for it. So if that kind of thing exists in Sonic's world, then yeah, I would imagine regular old scuba gear exists.
Most likely. All right, let's get into some standard Q&A from the Q&A pool. This first one comes from Uwaii. I see ideas and references from other works in the comics here and there, but are there any ideas / works that you wish you could adopt in the comic but can't or couldn't or wouldn't or anything like that, I suppose?
Not really. I mean, I try to measure the homages to what is appropriate for the series and not overburden it because I don't want it to become, references the comic.
Mm-hmm.
There's been one or two that I've tossed in there that was deemed too on the nose or wasn't really working as a gag. It's like, oh, well, toss it out. But nothing really crucial or memorable.
I see. All right. And this next question comes from Super Black Luigi. If there was ever, through some crazy miracle, a Sonic animated TV series based on the current continuity in the Sonic Archie comics, if you were asked to write for it, would you take the offer? How would you go about introducing the Freedom Fighters, the world, and the rest of the cast to the small screen? If you had control over it, would you prefer 2D animation or CGI? And what voice actors and actresses would you want the Freedom Fighters to have? Which I think that last one is one we've talked about before, but that's okay.
Yeah. Before we get into that, you say Super Black Luigi, and all I can think of is like Black Goku out of Dragon Ball Super.
As Luigi? So you've got,
yeah. So you've got regular Luigi just sitting there going, oh, no. And then you've got like this huge, buff, scowling Luigi with flowing black hair and this sinister grin.
It's like, oh no. Poor Luigi.
He just kind of looks down, lightning crashes. Let's it go.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, that's great. Yes. So, yeah.
Okay, so anyway.
would you write the TV show based on the comic you write?
Oh, heck yes.
Okay, good. I'm just checking.
I'd write just about anything you push in front of me.
It's true.
In terms of the approach, let's go ahead and just put the magic hat on this and say I've got complete and utter creative control and ignore all of reality.
Even Sega is not in control of this.
I'm the grand maestro from atop the mountain going, let's go on this.
Yes, you are the Super Black Luigi. sorry, Super Black Luigi, but that title has been usurped.
Oh, Lordy. No, we are not making fun of Super Black Luigi. This name has inspired greatness.
Yes, this name is amazing.
What I would love to do would be something akin to Young Justice, mm-hmm, by Greg Wiseman, and have a episodic but still continuity-driven adventure series, allowing the cast to be explored in bits and pieces, with Sonic Cell obviously being the focus. Mm-hmm. I'm old school. I love 2D animation over 3D. There's nothing wrong with 3D. You can do some amazing stuff, but I like good 2D animation.
Yeah.
So I would love to stay that. I would like to have as much of the old Saturn cast return to reprise their roles. And I don't know, I would be, I guess, in terms of tone along the lines of the comic, you know, something fun, fairly lighthearted, but still dramatic and with an obvious plot direction to it. That is never, ever, ever going to happen, but it's nice to dream.
Mm-hmm. I would love that. I wish it would happen. Oh, well, maybe in the far-flung future, somebody will figure out how to revive Ian or clone him, be an exact clone from the DNA left on his, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
The DNA comes from the single piece of Bumblecast merchandise that was ever produced and never bought.
Oh, man. What am I going to do with this coffee mug?
Instead of the Shroud of Turin, it's just the Bumblecast t-shirt.
Or that, yes, yes. I don't know. I think a Bumblecast coffee mug. It's like the Holy Grail.
A whole room full of various kinds of mugs.
Yes.
And only the one dusty Bumblecast mug yes. in the far corner.
Yes, that's the one that you pick up and it won't make your head explode. Oh, wait, I'm getting my movies confused here, I think.
The new Bumble mug, guaranteed not to make your head explode.
Yeah. Well, heck, that's a selling point for me.
In all seriousness, though, we have a fair number of listeners. If you guys would actually like to see us take a stab at, I don't know, your standard mug and t-shirt thing, let us know. If there's a demand, we'll look into making it.
Yeah, we'll try something here. We'll see what we can figure out. Maybe even like stickers or something. If you want a sticker, so you can slap it on your face.
Deface various public spots. Do not deface public
or
spots.
Or wherever you want to slap it. We'll just have to make sure our website's on there. All right. We're getting off topic here. Let's get into the last question. From Bucellarian Theme, would you be interested in the idea of Sonic Claws returning?
See, I tried to look this up
mm-hmm.
when you sent me the show notes, and I couldn't find a specific reference to Sonic Claws. So if this is like...
This is from the...
obscure bit of Sonic trivia, I'm going to have to actually say I don't get it.
It's Sonic Christmas Blast. You've seen Sonic Christmas Blast, right? That one-off Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog special.
I haven't seen the episode itself, but... Oh, wait. That's the one where Robotnik kidnaps Santa Claus, right?
Right, and it makes a robot Santa Claus in place
and
of him.
Is it that Sonic dresses up as Santa and takes over and delivers all the presents in
well,
time?
Well, basically, Santa retires and makes Sonic Santa Claus.
Okay. There we go. No.
Why not?
You gotta drag me kicking and screaming to acknowledge Adventures of in any format.
Hey,
I already gave you
back
Breezy.
Hey, you brought Breezy back.
I did.
That's one of the best things you did.
I brought back Wes Weasley. I brought back the Badnik trio.
Hey, come on. Schlimmer. There's some fun stuff in Adventures.
There is.
I mean, okay.
People like it.
People like it, and there are things to like about it.
There are
I love Robotnik in that show, though. Come on.
He needs to stay dressed far more often than he does in the show.
Well, yes, but it's still funny.
He needs to stay dressed and upright, not nude and rolling around at the speed of...
Oh, well.
I do not need to see that. I do not want to see that. It does not need to be.
I don't know, man. I still like that version of Robotnik. He's so silly. Anyway.
Like it for all the rolling R's.
Oh, yeah, the rolling R's are what is part of what's so great.
That I will not contest. That is actually fantastic.
I know. I love that. I don't know what it is about him. I don't know. It's snooping as usual, I see.
He is a fun Robotnik.
He is. It's funny because the modern take on Robotnik is kind of like a combination of the two old versions.
He's a lot more slapstick.
A little bit. Not overtly, but it's definitely elements of both the more dramatic Sad AM Robotnik and the hilariously stupid Adventures of Incarnation. So I don't know, I kind of like that. I think that's I do like the current incarnation of Robotnik too. He's fun for being an evil jerk. He's fun. Anyway, I think we're at the end of this podcast, this Bumblecast, as it were.
We are. We will see you next week for episode 2 of Bumblecast Gaming.
Yeah.
And then after that, you will have another week where we have Bumblecast episode 36, and then Bumblecast Gaming episode number 3, and on and on and on forever.
Yes. Do we want to announce what game we're going to be playing on Bumblecast Gaming next week?
No. Let it be a surprise.
Okay. Because we're alternating games too. So in case you guys were curious if we're going back to American Truck Simulator this month.
We'll have another game on deck. The truck, but we're gonna vary it up a bit.
Yeah, we're still gonna be trucking, but we've also got something a little bit more spacefaring.
Disastrous.
That too. It's very disastrous. It's very disastrous. But it's all in the name of entertainment, so
absolutely.
Yes.
Until then, if you need to look up anything about me, you can go over to bumbleking.com or follow me at IanFlynnBKC over Twitter.
And, of course, you can follow me at KyleJCRB on Twitter, or you can find out what I'm doing over at KNGI.org, where you can also find archived MP3 downloads of this episode and many, many others, including my other show, Game Fuel, that I stream live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on 8bitx.com. Thanks to 8bitx. And that's it.
Before we wrap up the show, we're going to give a quick shout out to all the patrons who make this and Bubblecast Gaming possible. Big thanks goes out to Daniel H, Zephyrflame, Damo, Dwiz Dizdin, John B, Sam Cybercat, Deus Miles, Mike B, Fancy Fool, Connell T, Daniel L, Samuel P, Justin G, Jennifer R, Candy for now, Andrew F, John M, S. Yovanovich 9X, Alex P, and James K. Thank you all for your continued support.
Yeah, there's some new names in there too. That's pretty awesome.
Always welcome the new ones.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much.
That's going to wrap us up for the Bumblecast this week. We will see you next week for more gaming and the week after that for more Bumblecasting. See you then.
Bye-bye for now. Crap, what was I going to say? This is why we have editing. It's completely gone. Ah, damn it.
Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download. Was that Taj? Did you really Taj it up there at the end?
Select your vehicle. Alakazam!
He was the best. And I mean the original in 64 voice, yeah, well, not the terrible 3DS remix.
What version of the voice do you think I was trying to do there and probably failing at?
Well, I know
at,
exactly but, what you're doing. Okay. I'm making a point.
Okay, yes, it's very true.
Because if you're going to do Taj, it has to be the proper one, no matter how culturally insensitive it may be.
Hmm. It's fine. He's a blue elephant. I am a blue elephant. I am not culturally insensitive. I am very culturally.
He's wearing a turban, Kyle.
I'm very culturally blue. My culture is very blue. Are you laughing at me?
I am, but that's because you're entertaining.
Oh, well, that's a shame. I don't know where this is going.
Into the ground, but it's still funny.
Wait, that's the show. That's where we started the show on.
We've come full circle.
Oh, we did it! Yay! Oh boy.